You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Ratna Ramanathan. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
We read about the virtual faces, the typographic portraits. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that project?
That was just something that I was fascinated by email, really. And this was, I think, in the early 90s. And I got email when I came to do my MA at St. Martin's. And at that time, it was just really basic. And when I went back, it was a way for me to keep in touch with... My course was very international. There were people from all over the world, literally. And that was the way that we kind of kept in touch. And at the same time, my friends from India had moved out internationally, so they were writing from different places. And what was interesting to me was the fact that, just as a designer, none of the textures of what they were talking about was coming through graphically for me. They were all standardized into one typeface, one point size, and none of that was coming through. So I wanted to twist it around, and sort of virtual faces was like my introduction to my friends, really. I kind of started visualizing them typographically, as different graphic elements. And some of it was quite harsh, I think. I had a friend who would only write me as a group. I was a part of a group that she wrote to about her developing cancer. And that became her identity for her. So I had her name, Familiar Cancer Patient, as a business card, really, which is three hearts over there. So some of it was quite hard-hitting. I had the permission of everybody, but I think some people, like, I had some very severe reactions to things. Another was a guy who would... I met really briefly on like an architectural website, and he started talking to me about his life, but he would talk only in the third person, and I thought it was really interesting that he would give me all these details about what he'd gone through, but it was only in third person. So, and he was quite, when I met him, he's had quite a tough exterior, so he was basically a bound book, but the pages of the book and all the emails were closed up inside themselves. So the information was all there, but it was all hidden.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of tear it out and kind of get through it. And I think it had a very interesting reaction in India, because people just didn't see that graphic design could actually end up with objects that were, non-advertising or non-commercial, but just have value in themselves. It was quite an enjoyable, I don't know why I did it, but I quite enjoyed it.
But it was exhibited?
Yeah, at the British Council. So they had a travelling exhibition. It started in Bangalore, in Madras where I'm from, and then it travelled around a little bit without me. And in India, when you have exhibitions, it's like a big deal. So, it gets into all the newspapers. So it can be a bit of a shock if you're not expecting that. You can kind of suddenly see yourself blasted on, daily newspapers and made into this. Yeah, it's a little bit... I don't deal very well with that, I have to say.
With the celebrity part.
I know. We're designers. We're meant to be anonymous.
I want to go back to the... have one more question on teaching. Does your judgment on good design differ when you are in England and when you in India? I mean, what?
It does. I think I'm a lot more gentle when I'm in India, in some ways, because I'm much more emotionally involved. So I find, different things, like, for example, the whole idea of mistakes. Like in India, you have a lot of Indian English, for example. And these are guys who don't know English, so they're writing in English, and they make mistakes. So there's a certain sense of affection that I feel when I see a sign that's misspelled, for example. And for me, that's still a system that's not agreeing to work. So I think that if I saw that in an Indian context, I would be amused by. For me, that would be a sign of the sign maker in that sense. In England, I think it's different because the standards are quite completely different. I'm much more demanding in England, I'd say, because of just the context that you're right, it's context based, I think. But there's some things that stay the same. It still has to be conceptually, there still has to be something there. And I'm quite demanding of that, I think, coming from St. Martin's, I think, has that kind of... And even Reading, there's always a question of where does this originate from? What's the depth behind this? What's, you know, where did the idea kind of come from? So I would say that I judge design not so much by surface, but by what's behind it and what brought it on. So good design for me is not really about, oh, that's a super typeface, it's all legible, it's aligned beautifully. And that's the same as my work. I think I tend to kind of, that's the last bit that kind of comes in, is in how strong is the idea? What is this concept about? Is it telling a story? What story is it telling me? So those are the questions that, you know, that I find positive answers for, then it's good design. And what is it demanding of me as a, you know, just the viewer? And if it is demanding in a good way, again, a very positive aspect of good design.
How were you interested in design in the first place? I mean, what triggers you? Is it in your family or...?
No, I had to fight really hard to take up design, actually. I really feel like you'll have been in my backyard. I think it started... It all went downhill when I was 5 years old and I was given this bright white pair of patent leather shoes.
That was downhill?
I hated the fact that it was white. So I pulled, your felt pens, and you have the inside bit of felt that's soaked in ink. So I broke apart the felt pen, and it was turquoise blue, and I painted my shoes blue. And I got so much of flack for it, but I had my blue shoes. And I come from a very traditional family, in the sense that my sister had an arranged marriage. My dad is very much a businessman in that sense. My mom was a homemaker. And I was expected to be a doctor, not a PhD doctor, but a doctor of a medical kind. And then I just, from that point, I think I was used to draw all the time. And I had a teacher in my 10th grade who just said, "Have you ever thought about taking design?" And sent me off to do an aptitude test, which was the big deal in India at that time. And I failed the physics portion, which is what would have made me a medical doctor, and aced on the designs and creative section. So they very gently called my parents and said, "We would recommend that she doesn't go down the medicine route."
So She'll kill a few people,
exactly, that's it. So.
And how did they take it then?
Well, my mum took it really badly. I think she really took it badly because she had the dream that, you know, my granddad was a famous doctor and that I would kind of follow in his footsteps.
And your sister? Is she a doctor?
No, that's kind of, yeah. She kind of managed to step out of that, actually, now that you mention it. So she took it quite badly. I mean, she didn't speak to me for about 2 weeks or something.
No.
It was very severe. But, and my dad used to keep referring to me as the painter in the family. You know, he'd say jokingly that she paints walls, but
and now?
Now they quite, yeah. I think they realize that it makes me really happy. Kind of like I'm completely at peace, and I tend to forget to do all kinds of things when I'm kind of in design. So, and I think that they made the effort to get to know more about it as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, now anybody who wants any of their friends or their friends' grandchildren who wants to do design. Is kind of immediately fixed onto me, so I have to kind of...
You're their hero.
You're the role model.
And also when you appear in the newspaper, that's also extra credit,
well,
right?
Well, that's true, yeah. My mom did like that aspect of it, so it was kind of completely traumatizing to me, yeah. That did go down well, yeah.
You're also the A-Type I delegate for India.
Mm-hmm.
We've interviewed Professor R.K. Joshi in Lisbon in September.
Yeah.
He also talks a lot about the different writing systems in India, which is also, do you work with the other writing systems than the Latin one?
Yes. Actually, the campaign that I did, which is what I'm going to talk about over here at Bologna, is something that I did for BBC World Service in India, which is basically BBC Hindi. And Hindi is the national language in India, though Growing up, I think I studied it only as a part of schooling, never really used it, because I come from Tamil Nadu, which we speak Tamil over there. So the two writing systems are completely different. I've worked with Tamil in book publishing as long text, and it's a bit like the way that Italian compares to English is it's much longer. It also works much more emotional in the way that it is. But we just, in a book way, we just deal with that differently in the sense that you put it just black and white, so the text stays in black and you just kind of, so the book doesn't really reflect the two different languages in that sense. There's no change in the design. It's only the text that kind of flows in and out. With BBC, it's been quite interesting because I speak Hindi, but I'm not good enough to be writing text about it. So I actually worked with a guy in India who was writing it and then translating it to the client. But, and also all the artists that we worked with only spoke Hindi, so they didn't speak the language. I mean, they had their own state languages, but this was the common link between us. So I quite enjoyed that actually, because it was kind of, we were speaking to a mostly not so literate audience in rural India. So it was speaking on a level that was true to the BBC content, but at the same time, in an understandable way to the audience as well. So we had to keep things really simple. Rhyming was a very important part. So that was quite interesting. The one huge issue I have with working with Indian scripts is there's just not enough good enough typefaces out there. So to actually type text means that you actually have to go, and we have a lot of what do you call matras and stuff. So all the symbols kind of, it comes on different levels. So every time you're typing something, you have to actually do it letter by letter on an English keyboard, which can just take you the rest of your life to kind of put it together. And there are very, very few typefaces, non-Latin typefaces, that are kind of out there that you could actually use. And that is a big issue. That's still a big issue. In fact, there's a conference that we are organizing at SEMrise on non-Latin typefaces, which is, we're hoping would kind of address some of that. But I would, that's a big call. I think that's a big issue for me.
Do you think it's symptomatic for the racial and religious differences in India itself?
The Latin writing systems? In some ways not. I think that because there's a state language, so there's a state level of it. But because there's a national language that kind of pulls things together. And India has this motto of basically unity in diversity, which I think works quite well. It's not trying to flatten you into one thing. It's kind of accepting that you are from a different place, but you're Indian. So I'm Tamil, but I'm Indian. So that's, and both work. So I can be Tamil wherever I'm in India. But they accept me first because I'm Indian. And I like that balance, I think. I think that kind of works quite well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay,
oh,
thank you.
Radio.